This one was a stretch, but a brilliant one. Before I get into my topic, snake steak, I need to ask you a question. We were having a discussion back there, and some of you that are sports fans know what an over and under is. Well, the number is 6. That's the over and under number for this question. How many of you have knowingly eaten snake? 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, come on.
You must have took the over.
I took the over. Okay. It's not bad if it's done right. Rattlesnake, deep fried, is basically like chicken tenders. So it's not all that bad. I'll read to you what they sent me. Snake steak. This title is a takeoff from the scripture that talks about if a son asked his father for meat, would he give him a serpent? The topic is asking the question, does the church need to recognize more that practical matters impact spiritual health? For example, teaching members how to parent, how to manage money, how to manage employment issues, how to set priorities, how to manage their time and to control their sexuality. How do these tend to affect our spiritual matters? Please limit your remarks to 1.5 to 2 hours. I'll try. You'll be done by 4 o'clock, or it won't be my fault. I'll put it that way. How's that? The Bible describes the church as the family of God. But many families don't function well. Personal opinion, I don't know of any family that is not dysfunctional to some extent. There are varying degrees of dysfunctionality, but I don't know of any family that's not somewhat dysfunctional. So it shouldn't surprise us when the family of God sometimes, not because the plan is imperfect, but because we are imperfect, is somewhat dysfunctional. But one of the functions, when it's functioning properly, of the family called the body of Christ is to build up the lives of those within the body and to build up the lives of those around the body. And there is a powerful longing in each of us. Sometimes we deny it, but I believe it's there, a powerful longing to belong. Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see that troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name. Familiar?
Yeah,
familiar. I suspect one of the reasons that particular show was so popular, both in its origin and in its reruns, and I'm not commenting on its merit, is because it touched a chord, a group of people that from different walks of life could go to a place and feel at home. Hi, Norm! And in comes Norm on his stool. You know, he owned that stool just like some of you own your seat in the pews. Mm-hmm. Vandalia people will be happy when we leave. They can sit back where the Lord wants them. We appreciate your patience. When I've been traveling around to various congregations, I always usually sit on the first two rows because the chances are I took nobody's seat. Once in a while, it doesn't work out that way. But we do want to belong. That's natural. And I think God wants us to want to belong. Why else would He have given us the church? And all of the issues that were addressed in that letter, parenting, money management, employment issues, priorities, time management, sexuality, those are crucial issues. But I have found they to be very delicate issues when you're trying to tell someone what you think they ought to do. To give a lesson on money, that's fairly safe. But to go to Dwayne and say, you know, Dwayne, I think you need to manage your money differently. That gets kind of touchy, or vice versa. And I don't know that it shouldn't. I believe those issues can be overtaught. I believe those issues can be undertaught. But I also believe that Solomon, writing in Proverbs 3:6, was correct when he said, "In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths." All your ways. Not just in how you do the communion, but in your whole life. I believe God has help and is help and can be help to all aspects of our lives. And when we get comfortable and secure enough as a family to share our thoughts, to share our ideas, and share our teachings, we will all benefit. And I believe our failure to do so sometimes, if not often, limits our service. For instance, those who are not good money managers, money stewards, will not be able to give as they have been prospered. You simply can't do it if you're not somewhat of a money manager. If you're not a marriage manager or a parent manager, you're not going to be able to qualify to be in the role of leadership in the church. You're not going to be able to really let your light shine. If you're a poor time steward, you're probably going to be slothful or distracted, but you're not going to be as effective for the Lord as you could be or should be. And obviously, if you don't control your sexuality as the Lord has instructed, you're simply going to enter into sinful conduct. So I don't view the particular examples that the elders here asked me to talk about as being extra-biblical or extra-Christian or extra-church. I believe they're right at the nuts and bolts of it, because they affect our service to the Lord. Things that distract our walk are issues of concern for the church. And all of those things can distract our walk, because we are to be a one another church. I don't know that this was the primary reason why the Lord did it, but I find it so fascinating why he chose exactly when he did to introduce the church to the world. And maybe part of it would be knowing that he knew that people would have to meet in homes. Now, do I think it's essential that we meet in homes? No, or we wouldn't have our buildings. But I believe long before there were pulpits, long before there were pews, long before there were songbooks in the church, there were chairs, tables, and stoves. A warm, hospitable atmosphere. Do you really think the early church came together and only did that and didn't share their lives and talk about how to make their homes, their families, their work better? I think that's terribly naive and would be terribly disappointing. You know, one of the wonderful advantages we have, and it's only one of them, as mutual edification groups, it tends to make us be smaller in size. Because when you reach a certain size, and I'm not going to give you the number, I can give you an opinion, you can't exercise all of the brothers and sisters in a mutual system. And I think one of the beauties of that is, being a smaller in size, we become so much more conducive to doing some of the things that I think are addressed in this letter. I said I'm not going to tell you the size of a congregation because the Bible doesn't, but that won't keep me from giving you my opinion. I would rather see two 100-member congregations than one 200-member congregations, and I might well rather see four 50-member congregations than one 200 for that reason. Are there advantages both ways? Fine. And if you're a member of a 200 or 400 or 500-member congregation, God bless you, and I'm glad you're here. But it does become difficult to exercise. To experience the fullness of church life. Most Americans who attend church, I don't think, understand church life as I think probably most of you do. For most of them, it's a Sunday morning, and sometimes only two or three of those a year. Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg of the function of the church, isn't it? Could it be that many of our problems in the church are symptomatic of a flawed experience in our church life? psychological problems, marriage problems, parenting problems, self-worth problems, money problems, career problems, loneliness problems, phobias, weaknesses. How often are they not addressed? Now, don't misunderstand, and I don't think you will. I believe in corporate worship as being absolutely essential, vitally important. But I don't think I can read about the New Testament church and come away thinking that worship services and even Bible classes were the sum total of the church's activities. Now, think about it. Today, how do counselors help people? How do counselors help people today? Well, they might start with a one-on-one conversation. It might then go to group meetings with others that are struggling with that issue. Sometimes it then, number three, would go to medications and antidepressants. Well, I'm going to leave number three alone. I don't know that we're qualified to prescribe those. But it's help through one-on-one and group support sharing. Professionals team first and turn first to communication. Isn't it remarkable that a multi-billion dollar industry of psychotherapy that we have created to help hurting people is built primarily on the ministry of communication and conversation? Oh, the power of conversation. You mean I'm not the only one that has this problem? You mean I'm not the only one that has a dysfunctional family? I really believe everybody here has one. Different degrees. I'm not saying throw your families away, but we all have our issues. One of the keys, I believe, to the early church's success was the small group meeting, conversing, and sharing their lives. And maybe in the religious world, and again, I believe in the mutual ministry concept, it has helped us not lose that maybe as much as some others. But I'll talk about that later. But we need to be careful not in the busyness of our lives to lose that. Now, when the early church met, did they have seminars on money management, time management? I don't know that they did. I hope they didn't call it that. But I think those issues were addressed. They ate and shared their lives. Well, when you eat and share your life with somebody, don't these things come up? That's been my experience. I may have done as much ministry in staying and eating with people in their homes as I have from the pulpit, or vice versa. Maybe I've benefited. That's one of the great characteristics of what we would call a mutual edification group. I suspect this weekend there have been a multiplicity of what the lawyer would call a sidebar, where two or three people get together and just compare notes and talk. We've had some wonderful sermons. I haven't had a chance to hear them all, but the ones I've heard have been very good. I might suggest that even above that, the greatest benefit here has been all these little sidebars where mothers can exchange ideas, leaders can exchange thoughts. That's part of ministry. Before I look at each one of these with just a brief specificity, I do want to talk and not be misunderstood. I am not talking about making the church more relevant. The very phrase, making the church more relevant, sends my spine to tingle. Because the church is relevant because God made it relevant. And you and I don't need to make the church more relevant. Maybe we need to make the church more church. But I believe it was God's intent for this, some of these, if not all of these issues, to be addressed within the congregation. And the reason I recoil, I guess, about the concept of making the church more relevant is that relevancy, by its very definition, tends to relate to matters at hand. That which is perceived to fit with what is currently enjoyed, valued, and admired. That's the way we typically use the word relevance. I'm not interested in making the church relevant. I'm interested in enjoying the relevancy of the church that the Lord provided. Today, a relevant person, if I wanted to be considered relevant by the world, I would simply be skilled at echoing back to the world the things they want to hear and value the most. In a society obsessed with appearances and image and reputation, relevancy is primarily cosmetic. Relevancy alone is neither a vice nor a virtue. But the love of relevancy, just like the love of money, can blind man from the things that we ought to critique and numb us the things which we ought to be considering. The church must be relevant, but we don't have to make it relevant. It already is. Now let me talk a little bit about each of those issues just briefly. I don't believe we should turn the congregations that we have or churches into social help organizations. We are here to proclaim the gospel. But there are areas of this in which we need to share and uplift and teach one another so that we can serve the Lord better. Money. 1986, a movie came out called Money Pit. Tom Hanks, Shelley Long. A movie on love and debt. There was one great line in that movie. They went to a cemetery and saw a tombstone and they said, "Here lies Walter Fiedling. He bought a house and it killed him." Well, you could relate to that one a little bit, can't you? Ever wish you didn't have the house you got and it was about a half the size? Now, I know those of you with a whole bunch of kids, you just ignore this part right now. But the day's going to come when you're going to say, "Why did we have this house?" You know, disagreements over money has probably killed as many marriages as anything. That old gimmick line, "It's not till death do us part, it's till debt do us part." Harnessing money. Paul gives us some powerful advice in 1 Timothy chapter 6. It must have been a concern, because he writes in 1 Timothy chapter 6 for several verses about his concern. "He that is proud, knowing nothing, having concern over money." Verse 9, "They that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and hurtful lusts." He's not talking about it wrong to have money, to be blessed. Abraham had money. David had money. Many of the heroes of the Old Testament, for sure, were very wealthy. But it was the management of it. When God finds someone who can handle money, he's found a gem. When you find somebody that can have money and that not come between them and the Lord, you know you found someone that's really got their thought process. But that does not happen naturally to most people. If you're a good money manager, it will probably amaze you and chagrin you how many of your brothers and sisters aren't. Now, I don't know which ones of you are. I have opinions, but you know how much that's worth. But it's a real struggle for many people. My wife, just on as a side, and it's more of a service than money making, does a little Avon. It's amazing how many people making probably in their household 6 digits a year have to wait until their paycheck comes in to pay her. That just blows my mind. Now, is that a sin? Not necessarily, but for a Christian, that can be a distraction. I think it is good, and there are so many passages in the Bible on this, for the congregations to have instruction on this. Not just sermons, but give and take instruction. I know this congregation has done that several years ago. I don't know how many, 3 or 4. I think Derek led that discussion to some extent. And if I remember right, maybe Derek told me this, he probably learned a lot by teaching it. I have any idea how his finances are. We'll check with Amy later. But that's important. And it's easy for some who are good money managers to just to assume it's a natural thing for everybody. It apparently is not. 49% of Americans of all ages have saved no money for their retirement. That sounds like a high number to me. Now, is that essential for salvation? No. But being good stewards of the resources God has given us is. 12 of the 38 parables that Jesus gave have to do with money and possession. 16% of the synoptic gospels have to do with stewardship of money. Why? Because it's so crucial. You know, people tend to try to satisfy themselves by accumulating things. I read this line. It's an interesting line. I'm just going to read it. He said, "Trying to be happy by accumulating possessions is like trying to satisfy your hunger by taping sandwiches all over your body." Now think about that. You're trying to be made happy by external things. When I'm hungry, I don't want any of that external stuff. Good line yesterday afternoon. "Just wait till they call us to the trough." It's a good line. I'll use it again. Is the church sticking its nose into other people's business? No, not if it's done right. We are learning from one another how to serve the Lord better. When Jesus said it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than a rich man to enter heaven or the kingdom, he wasn't saying it can't be done, but it's going to take some real effort. You cannot give as you have been prospered if you can't manage your money. So it becomes a spiritual issue. What about discussing work in the workplace? I gave a sermon on work a few years ago. I haven't given it very often because I found it to be rather touchy. Because in many of the congregations I go to, there are people who don't work, who maybe could. I'll say maybe. That's a judgment on my part. I'm not talking about people that can't work for various reasons. But work is something God expects us to do, and getting along in the workplace. I read this from a man. He said, "I always give 100% at work. I give 13% on Monday, 22% on Tuesday." Well, you can go down through the numbers, but he gave 100%. Some of you know that guy, don't you? That's not Christian. And just because you and I have been baptized for the remission of our sins doesn't automatically make us good employees and good at getting along with people. Christians can sometimes be the most obtuse, irritating, obnoxious people you have ever met. Present company excluded. Well, except for a couple of you. You know what I'm saying? It takes work. It takes sharing. You're not the only person that has trouble getting along at work. You're surrounded by them. Why not let's discuss and learn from the Bible how to do a better job to let our light shine in the workplace? I want to emphasize, though, I'm not talking about getting away from the Bible and making this a social seminar. I'm talking about using the Bible to help us to learn these valuable practical lessons. There are dangers and concerns in the workplace. Language, speech, morality. When I was in the secular workplace, I have great empathy for those of you that still are. I am a little more isolated. I don't know that that's good, but you would hear language and you didn't intend for it to sink in, but if you weren't careful, you'd take it home and bloop, here comes a word. Where'd that come from? Well, it came from work. And you want to swallow your tongue. That takes effort. It takes encouragement. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5 and 6, he talks about how a master-slave relationship, today that would be the employer-employee relationship. Now, obviously, when we're taught in Acts chapter 5, verse 29, we ought to obey God rather than men, there are lines in the sand that we can't cross to get along at work. There may be lines in the sand that you have to find other employment in order to be a Christian. But many times these are things that we, with a little bit of encouragement, can at least work our way through and be more effective as Christians. Time management. I'm not going to take the time to read it, but Romans 13, 8 through 14 tells us to be very diligent in our time, knowing the time. Again, being baptized for remission of your sins doesn't make you a good time manager. It gives you access to the plan that will. But I know more than one person that has 40 projects going and none of them are finished. That's not good time management. When we scratch at the very last minute, Saturday night, to prepare for our Sunday participation. Now, that happens occasionally, and you can't help it, but in general, that's probably not very good time management. Someone yesterday said, I wouldn't advise you getting up here without preparing, because everyone's going to know it. That's true. Our time belongs to the Lord, and each moment is His. Each moment is a gift. Therefore, with that gift comes a responsibility for us to use it to His glory. Time renders relevance, but it requires planning, it requires motivation, it requires implementation, monitoring, and control. In Psalms 90 and 12, Moses, the psalm that Moses wrote, in the King James it says that we should account for our days. In other words, we should look and see, now what have I gotten from this day? And it goes on to say the only thing that you can truly trade a day in for without getting shortchanged is if you're a little wiser at the end of the day. And that comes from using our time well. Oh, it's an all-important work in the ministry. Marriage and parenting. Many of you have heard me on this before and heard others on it, and I don't know that it's done a whole lot of good. Maybe it would have been worse if there weren't some teaching on it, but it is frustrating. But having children doesn't automatically tell you how to be a good parent. Now, there's some just feeling your own way. I'll grant you that. But we can learn from others. I think that was part of what Paul was urging Timothy to do when he said, have the older women teach the younger women. There are just things we have to learn. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 16, it talks about the whole body fitly joined together. It's a description of how the church causes growth and how the church builds itself up. Growth from Christ, that's supernatural. Growth from within the body, that's God's plan. According to the talents each one has. We're to minister to one another. The larger denominational groups will tend to say, well, let's have small group studies. Well, I'm in favor of small group studies, but I'm also in favor of reasonably small congregations so that the congregations can study, because I am not in favor of small group studies in general. And let me tell you why. If the congregation divides up into just, say, 10 groups, it sounds appealing, but it's been my experience that that is often the avenue that false teaching can enter in. Because there may well not be a pillar or someone grounded enough, or the eldership was spread so thin, they can't be in charge of that. Now, am I saying that's wrong? No, I'm saying I would proceed very much with caution, and in fact, I've been advised against it for that very reason. But we have the blessing in our home congregations of being able to do that as a group or as a couple of groups where elders can oversee what's going on. We've got an immense resource for joy and power. It was C.S. Lewis who said, Christ works on us all in a variety of ways, not the least of all, He works on us through each other. I would say, you want to have a money management course? Call Charles Engel. Now, he might not want to do it, but he's not frivolous in his spending. Or someone like that. We've all got different talents. Again, I want to caution us from getting into a social church element. I don't believe that's what we're after. I'm talking about applying the biblical scriptures to these very key issues. And I think we can do that in a way that helps and in a way that works. John Wesley once wrote, do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, as long as forever you can. No, we don't need glitzy programs. But there are times when we need to challenge ourselves to make sure that our studies and our encouragements are most practical. Is it good to study the book of Revelations? Of course it is. Can you be saved without understanding the book of Revelations? I sure hope so. And I just pick that as an example. I cast no stone against studies on the book of Revelation or Ezekiel or some of the prophetic things with symbolism. But isn't it a fact for most of us, our day-to-day living might be as well, if not better, served sometimes by studying how to be better leaders at the home, how to manage our resources better, how to be more effective in the workplace. The church has challenges, but the church will endure forever until the end of time. But some of you have seen firsthand congregations, maybe yours, shrink. I hope not, but that happens. Sometimes it's demographics. That doesn't bother me too much because that's simply natural. Sometimes it's other things. But sometimes it may be that we have gotten so ingrained in the theology and in the Greek and in the Hebrew, which has its place and is good, and lost sight of the things we need to help one another day in and day out. It's been my experience that probably when people fade from the faith, it's not because they disagree over the Greek terminology in this verse or that. It's not because they don't agree, even sometimes with doctrine. It's that they become distracted by the busyness of life. And maybe if we can work together in our individual congregations a little more effectively, we can encourage and instruct one another. When I have Bible studies with people outside of the church or are new to the church, one of the things I find that they often think is that everybody in the church, nobody has the same problems I have. I'm here to tell you that they do. We're all alike in so many ways. It's humorous. I'll sit in people's kitchens as I'm traveling and I'll think I'm home. They're having the same conversation that Donna and I have. We're so much alike. We can learn and share and be encouraged by that. If they can make it, you can make it. Because we're all in this together. As we close our thoughts, we're going to extend the gospel invitation. The Bible talks about the Christian walk in terms of a race. So that must be true, but I want to remind you that when the Bible talks about the Christian race, it's not talking about someone finishing first, second, and third. It's talking about all of us crossing the finish line successfully together. I know I've shared this with many of you, but I'll close with this example that means so much to me. It was in Seattle, Washington, 10, 15 years ago, Special Olympics, and you're familiar with the Special Olympics, 100-yard dash. These kids were so excited. They took off, and to them, they were just blitzing down. I'm sure they weren't going any faster than I could go. At about the 40-yard line, a little girl falls down on the cinder track. And if you've ever fallen on a cinder track, that hurts. And then a wonderful thing happened. The other 9 participants stopped and came back, picked her up, walked across the finish line together. More recently, you might have seen in the news a week or two or three ago, I don't remember, not long ago, I think it was a long-distance run, and someone collapsed. And rather than win, or rather than beat her, the other participant came back, helped her, and they crossed together. That is such a wonderful thought for the Christian walk. I don't want to finish ahead of Marvin. I don't want to finish ahead of Junior. I don't want to finish ahead of Richard. I want to finish together. And that's why we exhort and encourage and edify one another. If we can help anybody in any way this afternoon, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.